Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for September 4th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, a surgeon's hands may seem priceless, but a new surgery robot is giving them a run for their money. We'll tell you about that and also investigate whether reading in dim light really ruins your eyes. And we'll answer a listener's question about jet lag. But first, Suzanne spoke to a scientist about a new painless patch that could revolutionize vaccine delivery.
No one looks forward to getting their shots, but a newly developed microneedle patch could soon make vaccination painless. Georgia Tech researcher Mark Prausnitz says the small vaccine-infused patches adhere to the skin, and some models have even been designed to dissolve after the vaccine has been delivered.
Our goal is to take drugs and vaccines that normally would have to be given by injection with a needle and convert that into something more like a Band-Aid or a skin patch that patients could administer to themselves in a painless way and in a reliable way. Typically, after a microneedle has been applied to the skin and removed, it's actually quite difficult to find the spot that was treated.
His team gave flu vaccine to mice and found that the patch protected just as well as hypodermic needles did. He says the patch could greatly increase access to vaccination against a variety of preventable diseases, especially in developing countries.
There are many millions of people who need to be vaccinated every year, and there simply aren't enough doctors and nurses to do that vaccination. If you could move from the needle and syringe to something simple like a microneedle patch, then you could have minimally trained personnel brought in to carry out those vaccinations, and you could much more rapidly and efficiently give the vaccine.
He says a major goal is to develop a flu vaccine patch that could be widely distributed in the case of a pandemic.
We are particularly excited and focused on developing the microneedle patch as an influenza vaccine. Our vision for this is that every year, instead of needing to go to the doctor's office and get a shot, instead you could stop by the pharmacy and pick up your patch, or maybe even get it in the mail, apply it to your skin, peel it off a few minutes later, and the vaccination is done. We think this could very much increase the number of people who get vaccinated each year. A lot of people don't get their vaccine just because of inconvenience of having to go make an appointment, see a doctor, and receive that shot. In addition, in the event of a pandemic or some other emergency situation where vaccination or medication needs to be distributed quickly to a lot of people, potentially the whole country or even the whole world, assembling people at central locations, having doctors and nurses give shots at those central locations where the sick can cross-contaminate and get the healthy sick is not ideal. It's a very slow, inefficient process. What we envision is having microneedle patches potentially distributed by mail, and in that way, in a matter of days, everyone has received their vaccination dose, self-applies it, and much more quickly, the whole country, the whole world could be vaccinated or at least receive some medication.
Prausnitz adds that we often take vaccines for granted, especially in the first world. That allows us to become complacent or sometimes even skeptical of vaccines, but we do so at our peril.
Vaccines are one of the most cost-effective and most life-saving measures that exist in medicine. If we look back historically, people died often of infectious diseases that today vaccines prevent. When vaccines were first introduced, people were happy to receive those vaccines because they saw other people around them dying from those diseases and they knew they'd be saved. Today, it's more of an insurance policy. Today, in America, we don't see people dying of polio and measles and other terrible diseases because we've been vaccinated. If we all decide to stop, those diseases will come back, and there have been isolated cases where that's been shown and ultimately contained. So just like an insurance policy that we hope never to have to use, we don't want to get in a car crash and file a claim, vaccination should really be thought of in the same way. It's an insurance policy that we all need to have, and let's just hope we never, in fact, get exposed to the disease.
He and his colleagues hope the patch will be widely available within 5 years.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, we'll answer a listener's question. Brian Gratwick of Washington, D.C. has heard that the hormonal supplement melatonin can relieve the misery of jet lag. We asked health psychologist Keith Petrie of the University of Auckland if this is true. He explains that our bodies expect night and day to fall at certain times. Long-distance air travel throws our internal clocks out of sync, causing jet lag. But he says melatonin can indeed reset these rhythms.
The evidence seems to show that melatonin can improve jet lag. It probably should only be taken if you're staying for more than 3 days in a faraway time zone. And melatonin should be taken in the evening after you arrive, prior to bedtime.
He says getting outside into bright light during your travels can also help reset body rhythms and combat jet lag. Of course, as with any drug or supplement, people should consult their doctor before taking melatonin. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win one of our brand new Science Update mugs. Next, Justin Warner is going to tell you about some new developments in cancer surgery.
Despite all the technology behind them, cancer surgeons still confirm the exact location of a tumor by poking it. Preoperative scans like MRIs provide useful maps, but tumors can shift position during surgery. So before they cut, doctors feel around the affected area with a finger or a thin probe, looking for stiff tumors within the softer, healthy tissue. Recently, Canadian scientists decided to see if a robot could do this better. The work was done at Western Ontario University and the research center Canadian Surgical Technologies and Advanced Robotics. Jayinder Jagadeesan, who's now at Harvard University, was on the team. Their desk-mounted robot included a jointed base and a narrow 15-inch-long finger-like probe. The robots competed with both human surgeons and non-medical volunteers to locate tumors in cow livers.
The robotic trials show much better performance in terms of accuracy, the time, as well as the force required for doing the palpation.
In fact, the robot was 40% more accurate than humans. What's more, it applied 55% less force. Jagadeesan says that surgeons often press harder than necessary when they find a suspicious area.
So in this particular case, we control the robot in such a way that the forces that are exerted by the tool is always a constant, and we limited it to about 5 newtons.
He says that softer touch could help limit accidental damage to healthy tissue. Jagadeesan says the next step is to develop a sleeker prototype that would work in an actual operating room, particularly in minimally invasive surgery, which requires feeding instruments through tiny incisions as small as 10 millimeters across.
Thanks, Justin. Next, Suzanne reports on a study confirming what most of us have long suspected to be true.
People really do walk in circles when they get lost. This is according to Jan Saumann of the Max Planck Institute for Biological Cybernetics in Germany. He and his colleagues drop people off in unfamiliar forests and deserts and track them via GPS. Saumann says that if the sun or moon was out, the volunteers were able to walk straight ahead. But when it was cloudy, they walked in circles.
We didn't expect to find that at the beginning. We thought that people would do something random, but not really walking circles.
What's more, he says the circles were surprisingly small, just a few hundred yards in diameter. Further tests showed that people don't automatically default to one direction or another. Rather, Saumann suspects that without a fixed reference point like the sun, misleading sensory cues can make us veer slightly to the left or to the right without realizing it.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, now it's time for another episode of our new series, Reality Check, where we investigate paranormal claims, weird phenomena, and science folklore. This week, we heard from listener Karina Wu, who says her parents used to warn her that reading in dim light would ruin her eyes. But she thinks this may have been just a ploy to get her to go to sleep. So we consulted ophthalmologist Thomas Steineman of MetroHealth Medical Center in Cleveland. He says ciliary muscles around the eye control the shape of the lens, bringing things into focus. In dim light, these muscles have to work harder, causing eye fatigue. But he says the effect is temporary.
It's one of those things that's been perpetuated by parents for generations that does not confer any damage to the eye. There are no lasting effects from holding the ciliary muscle of the eye for sustained periods of time. There's no long-term effect of that.
So kids, you can keep on reading under the covers until your parents come up with another way to get you to stop. And if your favorite urban legend needs a reality check, write to us at our website, scienceupdate.com. Finally today, Suzanne has an interesting story about your nose.
Our nostrils may come as a set, but they're more independent than we may have thought. This according to Rice University psychologist Denise Chen. She and her colleagues pumped two different smells directly into each of a volunteer's two nostrils. One nostril got the scent of a rose, and the other, that of a felt-tip marker.
Instead of experiencing a blend of rose and marker pen, they experience an automation, that is, they smell predominantly rose smell, followed by the predominantly marker smell.
That implies that the nostrils take turns sending signals to the brain. Chen notes that our brains also integrate separate information from other paired organs, like our eyes and ears. So it's possible, for example, that our nostrils might attend to different components of the same odor in order to create a complete smell experience.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, since we're heading into autumn, we'll tell you why leaves in Europe don't turn the same colors in the fall as leaves in North America. We'll have the latest developments in cord-free power generation and tell you how to stay updated on the location of the nearest asteroids via the internet. Until then, keep current on the exciting world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.